You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you in association with Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Jankauskas is going in on the goalkeeper. Hakowski wanted all day. Jankauskas wraps it up for Hearts.
Hello and welcome to Shirts Around the Funnel, the spiky little brother of the Scarves Around the Funnel Hearts podcast. We're back again with another episode. I'm delighted to be joined by my co-host, Grant Young. Grant, good evening to you.
Good evening, Paul.
Life treating you well? We're recording this during the international break, which I personally don't like the international break because it disrupts football flow for me. How do you deal with it?
I suppose I do watch Scotland when possible. I certainly enjoyed the first 70 minutes. The last 20 minutes is maybe slightly more forgettable, but yeah, I try and get my fill of international football. I suppose that's what I do.
So the man who's joining us on our podcast has to watch all sorts of football to keep up to date with his daytime job as Hearts TV analyst, Terrace TV presenter and content manager at Heart of Midlothian. Robert Borthwick joins us. Robert, how are you?
I'm very well, gents. Thanks for having me on.
That was brilliant. Glad that you could make it. You are born and bred in Edinburgh, therefore I presume, Robert, you were born and bred a Jambo as well.
I had zero choice in the matter. I was absolutely thrown into going to Tynecastle from the age of about 5 years old. So I didn't have a choice in that matter. But I'm delighted. I'm delighted either way.
What's your first memories of Hearts, Robert?
First memories of Hearts as a sort of entity is probably watching my dad and my brother going to the games and me thinking, why can't I go yet as a sort of four-year-old? And sort of seeing them either coming back very happy or very sad and being confused about that fact, not quite knowing why they're sort of acting that way. I think a couple of cup finals and semi-finals in the early 90s, Airdrie springs to mind, my dad coming back being deeply, deeply unhappy about those things. I think it was curiosity got the better of me when I was about five and I just sort of forced it and said, no, I really want to go to a game. So I was in the Rosebank stand the year it was thrown up. Was my first game. I never got to experience the shed or anything like that. But the Rosebank and the Wheatfield and the old Terrace on the Gorgie stand is sort of my very early vivid memories of watching Hearts.
Yeah, Grant, I guess it's interesting that we're getting to that stage where a lot of people who go along to Tynecastle don't actually remember the old Tynecastle as was, one main stand, you know, the shed area, as we politely put it, the urine running down the terraces due to lack of toilet facilities, you know, the smell of alcohol. I mean, it was a different beast and it has been transformed. Yeah.
You are absolutely right. I forget what age I am, to be honest, and I forget that people, you know, didn't have the joy of the terraces or even enjoy the joys of when my dad came back from the football when I was younger. I had to go and queue up for the pink. A queue about 10 guys outside the newsagent for the pink. And, you hope it didn't get sold out before you got there. So, yeah, they're my memories as well. Yeah, but it's a long time ago now.
And for our youngers listening, the pink was the paper that was printed by the Edinburgh Evening News on a Saturday evening for distribution by about 6 o'clock to all your local newsagents. And you would go up there to read. The poor journalists had to write most of their match reports and then it was a sentence at the end. So it could be 3-0 Hearts. They could lose 4-3. You would have 17 paragraphs about Hearts, 3 goals, and then the last paragraph talking about how they got beat. It was that kind of thing. It was interesting. It's the same in Leith. It's the same in Gorgie. When your rivals lost, that was just as much fun getting the pink as when your team actually won. Middle pink used to get a mention now and then. Robert, the maroon of Hearts is such a distinctive jersey. What's the first jerseys that you start to remember you started to own?
So it would be the sort of mid-90s. The first jersey I remember, not necessarily the first one I owned, was the pony sort of two-toned maroon stripes with the white collar. And obviously the phenomenal away kit that season as well, the blue, white and maroon stripes of various different widths going down the top. And it's something that actually in my old job, we painted that design onto the walkway in the main stand. Such was my love of that kit. But bringing back memories of like Alan Johnston, Paul Ritchie, Gary Locke, you know, the young team that we had coming through at that time, and then the elder statesmen, I suppose, if you will, of the likes of Craig Levein and John Robertson. That's the kit that Hearts were wearing when I went to my first game. John Miller scoring the first goal I'd seen until we brutally punted him to Raith Rovers in exchange for Colin Cameron later that year. But that's probably the sort of earliest memory of the kits. The first one that I, or certainly the oldest jersey that I actually have, is the 1992 away kit. It's got all the embossed Hearts badges on it, white and maroon, the maroon collar. I think it is the Strongbow version, not the Miller Holmes one that I have.
Yeah.
Made by Admiral. Still pride of place. Comes out for cup finals and nothing else now. It's looking a bit faded and a bit bobbly, but I wore it in... Wore it in 2006 and wore it in 2012. I won't mention the cup final since, but I still believe it to be a good luck charm. So yeah, that proper like shiny nylon early to mid 90s look is very much my early memories of Hearts kits.
Grant, it's interesting that pony kit, which is not a favourite of mine. I didn't like the two tone. That was my biggest problem with it. But funny that Robert should mention it. John Miller is just one of these players that you think about in that kit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a pet hate about that kit. And if you look back on, you know, if you are doing a bit of research and you're looking on the web, when it's worn with the white shorts, it almost looks anemic. But it's when it's worn with the proper maroon shorts, it looks fantastic. But I don't know, the white shorts take away from it. But Rob, you've picked a perfect time, because that's, you know, the wacky kits of pony. And then, of course, you had Asics after that, and some classic kits during the time in the 90s. They almost got to do what they wanted to do, you know, have a bit of muck about. Pony certainly did that, but yeah, but they came out with some classics. Absolutely.
Shirts Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs.
Now, Rob, now I know you work at Hearts as the content manager. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I've just been in the job just over a month, so joined in February of this year. And yeah, it's basically just, it's working with all the social media channels, all the sort of filmed production that you see coming out from Hearts will probably, if it's not done by me directly and my team, then certainly it will have gone through us at some stage. So yeah, it's basically a lot of match day stuff, a lot of filming, obviously around the actual football, which is the most important part. I think the thing that people want to see the most, but then got the season ticket campaign that's running just now. And then the one that will excite you guys, I'm sure, is the kit launches coming later on in the year. So we're sort of planning for that sort of stuff just now as well. So it's really varied. Obviously, commercial partners that we have, sponsors, all that kind of stuff. Working with them, collaborating with them to make content. And yeah, it's a very, very full, very busy, but so far incredibly fun job. Feel very, very lucky. Was never good enough to play for Hearts, but throughout my life, I've gained a skill set, which means I can now work for Hearts, which is the next best thing. So yeah, I'm fresh in the door, but I'm really enjoying it so far.
How do you judge success then on what you do in terms of content? Is it just sheer volume of numbers? Is it positive feedback? Or do you look for almost, you know, they talk about American elections or UK elections, there's bellwether states. If you carry that constituency, you do well. Are you looking at a certain market to carry? Because football fans, and this might come as a shock to Grant as well as you, can be a little bit fickle.
Well, they certainly can. Me being one of them, by the way.
But I was coming to that.
but no, I think it's really varied. because I think everything that we do is quite different. So for match day stuff, for example, you are talking to the fan that goes to the game or the fan that couldn't make it to the game. For season tickets, you're talking to the fans that are just going to the games that you want to bring in and obviously get them to renew, or if it comes to it, buy or join the waiting list. And then for the kit launches, we're talking to people worldwide. You know, we ship the kits to everywhere all over the world. You know, Dubai, Australia, America, Canada, you know, every single corner. So it is really varied. I think that a big thing for me is fan sentiment and judging against the fan sentiment and seeing, you know, are they enjoying it? They might not give it a retweet every single time, but is it something that you might see if you go on to the likes of Kickback or Talk Hearts or whatever? People talking about it in the pub and saying, like, right, you know, I saw that Kenneth Vargas interview the other day. I thought that was brilliant. I think that's the main thing for me. And you know, you can start attaching numbers onto it the sort of further you go. I don't think Hearts have had, to use boring business speak, KPIs, key performance indicators as such in the past. But I think for the time being, it's building up a bit of an identity. What do Hearts do outward facing in terms of the content they create? How is that sort of taken and how is that received by the fans? And then we can move on to the sort of bigger stuff, like, you know, how many numbers are we wanting to do? How can we gauge kit sales or season ticket sales against campaigns and all that kind of stuff? So very much just in the here it is, hope you like it stage as it stands, and we'll tweak as necessary and then we'll sort of go from there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you work in the media as well. I'll come to that in a second. But there is almost there's been a change over the last 20, 25 years, obviously, with the internet, social media, etc. But even the way that the national media look at stories, that radio look at stories, there is that gap. And for a long time, clubs did absolutely nothing with their own IP. And it's almost this world where they've discovered the actual value of going direct to, I'd say direct to consumer, but that's not quite correct. It's direct to fans. I think a fan is a different thing to a consumer. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that, you know, what we have in Scottish football generally, like you say, I sort of I do this as the day job, but on a view from the terrace, it's very much my position to talk up all of Scottish football. And I think that's a really easy thing to do. Because, I mean, even just looking at professional football, you've got 42 unique football clubs, all with their own selling points and all with their own thing. You know, Arbroath right next to the sea, Ayr United, Somerset Park, a proper fuel-back stadium. Wherever you look, there's an easy selling point for every single football team. And I suppose that the sort of fortune that I've been given here is that I'm a Hearts fan working for Hearts, and I already know that it's a club that's entrenched within its community. Gorgie is such a massive part of Hearts. And that's not just for Hearts fans. That's for away fans as well. Tynecastle always voted as the best away stadium to go to in Scotland. So you hone in on that and you properly choose to take Gorgie and use that as a really strong part of your identity. And then that becomes part of the content that comes out. And then obviously you've got the Foundation of Hearts and Big Hearts, the official club charity, that are doing very much the same thing. And it's all coming under that circle, that umbrella, basically, that, you know, you always want to talk in a worldwide way and you want to make Hearts the biggest team that they can be. But it's something that, for example, if you look at Arsenal down south, they use Islington incredibly well, North London incredibly well. I don't go there. I don't go to Arsenal games, but I love the content that comes out. And I'm like, right, Islington looks cool. How can we do that sort of thing with Gorgie? How can Hibs do that with Leith, Rangers with Govan? And you go from there. So, yeah, I think it's a deeply important thing that clubs should be doing. And it's really heartening to see a lot of clubs in Scotland beginning to do that. Motherwell being a really decent example of that as well.
Yeah, Motherwell have done a lot. Grant, when you think about, again, just to go back a little bit of time, that Hibs could have landed up at Hermiston. Hearts could have been goodness knows where outside the city. I think we've been so fortunate to be blessed that both teams, for whatever reason, and it might have been more by blunder than judgment, actually remained in their homes.
I think you're right, and putting that aside as well, I think what I appreciate from what the guys do on View from a Terrace as well is that I think there is an element of pride in Scottish football, and I think there is a siege mentality from Scottish people about Scottish football as well. So, you know, I always, the feeling I get over the last 5, maybe even nearer 10 years is that a lot of people think, you know, we're never going to compete with the billions and billions in Sky. But really, I would now rather turn on a Friday night to watch Dundee United versus Raith Rovers and go in on a Sunday and watch Southampton versus, you know, QPR or I don't know, you know, Man City versus Luton. I think Scottish people are embracing Scottish football a lot more, and it warms my heart that's why I think why I love the Terrace so much, because it does give you an insight to what's going on, and I really think that Scottish people are embracing it. I'm never, you know, I like Scottish football, but I'm only ever going to support Hearts. But I love to hear everything that's going on. And I think one of the things that is always missed, and I think, again, that's what the Terrace do well, they showcase what people do for Scottish football, communities, and how much football intertwines with a community makes a massive difference. And COVID was one of the things that just brought that so crystal clear about how much good people do that are involved in football clubs. And for me, it can never be, you know, it should be told, that story should be told more and more and more. It still gets skipped over. They would rather tell you the bad stories than the really brilliant good stories that are going on. So I just hope the guys keep up the good work, plus all the other clubs in Scotland that communicate that through social media. I just think it's great. Great story.
I agree. It's interesting. You're looking at Art House against box office. I mean, the English Premier League, it's interesting. If you look at the amount of money that's in the English Premier League and look at how much money people lose, it's quite incredible. I think one of the things I think Scottish football is starting to realise is you've got to operate within your budget. You've got to operate within your means. And if that means that you're going to be a Championship club and solvent, rather than a Premiership club and risk of going to the wall, that's the way it's got to be. Let's talk about View from the Terrace. And before you tell us which of your co-hosts you actually can't stand, because I'm sure there's got to be one of them. it's been a great idea. Has it surprised you? Has the success surprised you?
Even getting the commission in the first place, Paul, was a huge surprise, to be honest with you. We were kind of a wild card in the first place, to be honest. I think there was quite a few different pilots were put in for it, for whatever wonderful reason, we were chosen as the ones. And yeah, it did surprise me to start with, but I think that the longer it's gone on, the more hunger you see for the wider Scottish football community to have their stories told. And I think that what Grant was saying there is something that I can claim absolutely zero credit for, is what the team behind the scenes do in terms of getting out to, you know, far-flung areas of Scotland are very much within the Central Belt at Celtic. You know, from the very top to the very bottom of the game, there's an endless list of stories of people and characters that we can celebrate and talk up in Scottish football. And I think that's a great sense of pride. And I think that it's testament to the guys that put the TV show together that it's now seen as something that people want to see and are expecting to see every week, is like, right, what are we going to learn about this week? You know, is it going to be Rossi? Is it going to be Celtic or Rangers, you know, providing commentary for fans hard of hearing? And, you know, there's all these stories and all the things that are put together. And I think that it's just wonderful that we've been put in a position for the time being anyway, that we can be the ones that talk up and talk about Scottish football. And I think it's amazing. And I'm very proud, to be honest, to be just a small part of it, because I think it's spoken to a lot of people and maybe changed the opinion of a lot of people in terms of what happens within Scottish football as well. So yeah, it's been great, and I get to go up to Inverness tomorrow and do a live show in front of an Invernessian crowd. So it's bad things that I wouldn't have thought possible just a few years ago.
And it is great, because it's difficult for, if you look at it, you know, the Daily Record can't lead with what's happening at Rothesay. You know, Sportsound on a Saturday's headlines, like it or not, cannot be about Annan Athletic. So it is lovely that the BBC as a wider whole can take something and say, look, go for it. I mean, you even talked to a colourblind football commentator, and I have to thank you very kindly for that, because I thought Neil and the team did an incredible job. And the reason I bring that up is just to say to you that every ground I have been to since that aired on View from the Terrace, at least one person, if not more, and usually more, have actually mentioned that to me. So the reach is there.
Yeah, and that's the brilliant thing. I think that, you know, there's certain VTs that we've done in the past. Like, I know that Arbroath got a few more people in the door after, you know, season one, episode one, shooting it like a Wes Anderson film. And it's that sort of thing, because people then see that as an opportunity to maybe speak to an individual that works behind the pie hut, or a commentator that they recognise from the TV show that did a VT. or, you know, they might want to go and sit in a certain part of the stand because they've seen that on the show. And I think that, again, it's about shining a light, and you're right, the reach is there. It's never going to be complete mainstream. I know it's silly, it's on BBC Scotland, but we don't talk about the Old Firm necessarily, Hearts, Hibs or Aberdeen that often, which is your five biggest teams in Scotland in terms of fan base, which probably takes up a huge percentage of the football watching fans within Scotland as well. But for me, that doesn't really matter as much. It's the fact that the people that are feeling represented around Scotland are tuning in on a Friday and seeing something that maybe speaks a bit closer to home than talking about Ibrox or Parkhead or Tynecastle.
And Grant, I think it brings out the best in Scottish football fans because you appreciate the stories elsewhere. I think the day that you lose the ability to take the mickey, for example, out of another team, no matter who that team is the day that the game's gone. I mean, one of the joys is being able to, you know, I've got a Dundee United supporting friend. Obviously, he's in therapy and we're trying to help him as best we can. But it's that kind of thing. You want to be able to take the mickey. And if we lose that in Scottish football, if we lose the beauty of the game's done.
Yeah, and I think what Rob was saying is absolutely right, right? What they've done is they've just got it right. Because a lot of the content resonates with fans, and I think that's what makes you feel that you want to see more. But I also appreciate the humour. And, you know, they've done it perfectly, because it is like you're sitting with your mates in a pub, and what you guys are laughing at, you'd find yourself laughing at too. So, and it's very, very hard to get that to come across in the right way on television. But, yeah, that's what I'm just, you know, as I said, just keep doing it, because the balance is great. And it just shines a light on Scottish football. It shines a light on lots of different people, and it's just really enjoyable. That's all I can say about it. Really, I just think it's great.
This is far too positive for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you did. Sorry, Paul. I'm just going to say, but you did huckle. You did huckle poor Doogie Imrie when it comes on, and then they've gone down the toilet, Morton. That was you guys. That's your fault. They've not won a game. They're not even going to make the playoffs.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Rob, just to ask you, I mean, we talk about the positive. Have you had much negative reaction? You know, I mean, you're a Hearts fan. You're seen as a Hearts fan, and you will get the usual tropes, I would imagine. Oh, he only cares about Hearts. He's just pretending about this. How do you deal with that?
You very rapidly grow a thick skin, and we found that very much in season one. It was new. We were not the polished broadcasters that you see now, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, there was a lot of people tuning in for the first time, maybe Celtic or Rangers fans, maybe just fans of football who didn't take to the show. And they would let you know on social media. I think it's a very social media-driven TV show as it is. We're very loud on Twitter, Instagram, not just us as individuals, but the accounts themselves. And we sort of welcome all feedback. You know, there's no such thing as bad feedback. You know, it's either good feedback or opportunities to learn. But yeah, it's, you grow a thick skin, and there's a lot of people that it's quite a Marmite TV show. You know, it's not for everyone, and I think that's absolutely fine. You know, I don't think that we should be for absolutely everyone. I hope that as many people can watch it and take enjoyment from it as they can. But football is such a wonderful thing now, because there's so many different ways to take it in. There's so many different ways to consume it. We've got vloggers who are massively important to the sort of younger fan that, you know, put things up on YouTube. You've got mainstream television, you've got football TV pundits, former players, and then you've got us four idiots who just so happen to be friends and love Scottish football. And some people love to take it in that way as well. So, yeah, you grow a thick skin. I've had a few DMs, mainly from Hibs fans, but you know the odd Aberdeen fan have been annoying them quite a bit recently as well. So, you know, I think if you bring it on yourself, if you put yourself out there, you've got to be welcome to anything that comes back.
Yeah, somebody's had plenty opportunities to learn, as you put it. I think there's also got to be, in the serious side of it, there's got to be a credence to it. You know, I mean, if some guy with five followers says that you're an asshole, you know, that's one thing. If, you know, if a former professional football questions you, that's where there might be a, you know, a dialogue that you can start. It is such an interesting world. But as I always say to people, I say this to everybody, if you go into Twitter looking for praise, you're going to the wrong place and you need to have a word with yourself, because that's the last place that you need to go. Rob, before we let you go, and I know you're content manager at Hearts, and I know you're going to be involved in the kit launch, but as one of the perks of coming on to the Shirts podcast is I get to bestow gifts on people. So you are going to, because it's in my gift to give, you're going to design the ideal Hearts home kit and the ideal Hearts away kit. What would they look like if you were in charge? What would your dream designs be?
If I was in charge, and this, I hope this isn't a thinly veiled way for you to try and get me to reveal what the new kits look like, by the way.
No.
I did feel like you were about to just ask me what they were.
wouldn't do that.
For me, an ideal world, I love a collar. I love a fairly prominent white collar on a home kit. I love a deep maroon. Obviously, there's a Pantone now, which is great. It means that, you know, we will always have the Heart of Midlothian maroon. I like the sponsor to be white. I'm very traditional. You know, I want the Hearts badge on the left. I want the manufacturer on the right. I want white cuffs around the sleeves. I want it to be available in long sleeve, because I always wear long sleeve kits. That's always what I have worn, always what 100%. I will wear. It's becoming... Thank you, Grant. And it's becoming more of a rarity nowadays. White shorts, and so this is where I've stirred up controversy in the past. I really like Hearts in black socks, like we did in 2014-15, and like we did in 1950s. It's Torino also wear black socks, but obviously a very successful time for us, the 1950s. And we wore black socks with maroon and white trim. And we did it again in 2014-15. And I absolutely adore that as a look for a Hearts kit. And that's where it breaks from tradition, I think. That's where I'm going in an opposite direction. For an away kit, just make it as mad as you can. Just make it white. Nah, come on. Like, we've got enough white and maroon away kits in our past. Just make it mental. We haven't had a fluorescent one yet. We've had the pink one this year, which I really like, because it has gone in a different direction. One of my favourite kits that I don't think I've brought it up yet, was in the late 90s, which was yellow, black and maroon sleeves with the Hearts badge on, like a big crest thing and a black collar. I adored that kit. I think we only wore it a couple of times. So let's just get a bit mad with the away kits. I think that's where you should be given creative license to do whatever you want.
Grant, should I take the license back from him, or has Rob got a point?
No, spot on with the home kit. I think the away kit should probably be a bit traditional. And the third kit, I think you can just go do whatever you want with. So kit whatever, you know. A reproduction of yellow point.
Yeah, that's another discussion about third kits, and do you need a third kit every single year? Should it just be for special occasions? Listen, we could be here for hours.
We could be, and quickly on that. So, the content manager probably released something on on the website to say that, you know, we had done really well with the new sponsor, or the new sponsorship deal with Stellar. Can you just confirm then that the third kit will, going forward, have a sponsor on it? So we're going away from a non-sponsored third kit to then go with a sponsor on it.
Yes, that
correctly.
Yeah, I believe that's the case. So Stellar Armada, the deal that we've done with them, I believe, is a 3-year deal, and every kit that the men and women's team wear will have the Stellar Armada logo on it as the sponsor. I know, obviously, in recent years with the third kits, we've been sponsorless. I think it kind of goes back to that fantastic black and maroon one that we had in 2018-19, I think it was.
Yep.
And then, obviously, the blue and black stripes, and then the special anniversary kit this year. But yeah, from now on, the sponsorship dealers that Stella are going to be on all three.
Good to know. Thanks for confirming that.
Well, you don't look happy about it. You don't look happy about it.
I get the commerciality, but I did quite enjoy a sponsorless kit. I think it always, you know, it pops out, if that makes sense, without having a sponsor. But I get why they would do that. So, you know, you have to increase your revenue streams.
As long as you're not putting Wonga on it, you can put anything on it that you like. Gents, we're out of time. But Rob, it's been absolutely fascinating. It's been great to have you on. We'll no doubt have you back at some point, but we wish you continued success in your role at Hearts. And, of course, with Terrace TV, keep making great television and send our best to the boys at the Terrace as well. But for now, you have been listening to Shirts Around the Funnel, the spiky little brother of Scarce Around the Funnel. I've been joined this evening by Robert Borthwick and Grant Young. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Remember, blood doesn't show on a maroon jersey. Until the next time, thanks for listening and bye for now.
Shirts Around the Funnel and Scarves Around the Funnel is sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s.